So, okay, this is Crafting the Short Story, episode, I believe, 7. And we're going to be talking about the modern short story market and how short fiction operates right now and what the implications of that are, and perhaps some suggestions that people have, where to find good short fiction, some authors they might like more than others. And we're just going to kind of go from there. So why don't we do like a real quick roundtable introduction as to who we have here. This is Darren Todd, of course, DarrenTodd.net.
Susan Anderson.
Bob Brooks.
Danae Winsley.
She had to think about her last name. That's right. So,
no, I've actually heard if you pause between your first and last name, it's better because then people remember it. So
ooh,
I do it on
that's
purpose.
Nice. Darren Todd. Now you won't forget. Darren. Okay, so now we are joined here by Andrew Reese. Hello, Andrew.
Hello.
All right, we're going to talk about short fiction and the modern short fiction market and where short fiction is nowadays. So obviously, it's not news to any of you guys that short fiction collections of short stories, don't sell as well as novels, even with someone, you know, a big name. Chuck Palahniuk has put short fictions together, Stephen King, Dean Koontz, all these guys, and notoriously, they don't sell as well, even if, like with King in particular, you might see parts of that turned into movies. I know Four Seasons, those were novellas, but all but one got turned into a movie, I believe. So, I mean, these are not unpopular. They simply don't have the market, it seems. So what do you guys think about why is novel king right now, and why are people sort of marginalizing short fiction in their buying habits?
One comment that I would make about that is that when books became available to the masses, they would only buy a book that was really, really long. And the reason for that was they wanted to be entertained for a long time, and so they expected a full story. And I don't think that's gone away. I think short fiction, which I prefer to write, is, I think it's difficult to write a good story in a short space. I think if you have 180 pages, you have more latitude and you can kind of wander off and it will be all right. You can't do that in a short piece. But I think people still want that full novel experience, so it's hard to entice them.
Now, what do you think, how do you think that has changed with the digital market? Because what I've started to see is, first of all, being a huge fan of audiobooks, I've seen a lot of abridged versions. I've seen a lot of abridged versions where something is full length, the length expected, with like, let's say, modern suspense, Greg Iles and Michael Connelly and those guys. You know, you're talking between 100,000 and 120,000 words, therefore between 10 and 12 discs. And I've seen it be even more prevalent that you're going to see the abridged versions. That's about 5 to 6 discs. And I literally know of people who, if they listen to a full-length one, if I give them a full-length novel or whatever, any kind of book that is going to be 10 to 12 discs, they think, wow, this is just way too long. They've gotten so used to the 5 discs. And then with digital distribution, the new standard for what I am seeing is that, not just with young adult, but with other genres, is 50,000 is the new novel, whereas it used to be 70,000. Go ahead.
I thought
you had your hand up.
I do have a comment, but I didn't want to interrupt you at all.
No. This is kind of a fluid discussion, so.
I don't really do a lot of audiobook listening at this time. I'm sure I will in the near future. What I would defer to is sort of something Joan Van Orsdal. She said that a novel is more forgiving for a writer. Mm. So, for example, it doesn't all have to be brilliant, you know. In the short story experience, I think for readers, there's two different schools. One would be that they do want that fuller experience. They do feel like they're missing something in a short story. You know, they're not getting the whole story. versus in a novel, they definitely are. And even if it bogs down in some places, it's okay. I would say, as a reader, to study writers from that aspect, I prefer short stories because I want to see what types of subject matter the person covers and what their interests are and frankly, their capabilities.
Okay, right.
Well, if you look at it from a practical viewpoint, perhaps the short story collections don't sell as well because the publishers push the novels more.
Sure, it could be top-down, definitely. Yeah, as opposed to bottom-up, I would say. So, yeah, that's a possibility. I don't know. You're one of the ones that likes the classic storytelling structure. Do you think this goes back to Campbell as well, in that in a novel you have time for that arc, as opposed to a short story collection where, I really feel this way, that sometimes the writing is superior, but the arc is not necessarily there.
Or the story may end where he has not reached his pot of gold, but the understanding is that he's failed or he's taken a different tangent, which leaves the reader up in the air in more of a twist than a novel. You've got to get to the end of the novel.
Sure.
Short story, you can end on a sentence fragment or something like that, which I think is, I hate to say clever, but I enjoy that twist more so, as Drew said, the novel you can mess up and still get back in road and end the way you want to.
Yeah. And I don't know, by that calculation, then do you think it's possible that short fiction can be, not necessarily can be, but perhaps is, generally speaking, a little more, not just experimental, but because it's not confined to having a satisfying story arc, that maybe that is where an author is putting some of their, testing their skills, I guess, as opposed to, because you got to know by now, you have someone like, Michael Conley, I'll pick on him again, or Lee Child, let's say, in the Reacher novels. I mean, by now, it's got to be formulaic down to, like, chapter by chapter, even. He's got to have, probably has a formula. If he were challenged with writing short fiction, it probably would be very difficult. I mean, granted, it's difficult for a very successful screenplay writer to go to fiction because they're used to only dialogue telling the story.
Well, you brought up the digital. Now, I'm not as familiar as you are, but could be that the short fiction or the short stories are selling as well, but not through publishers, but just from people reading them online.
I do think it's great that when I see a story, and even the house that I'm a freelance editor for, Evolve Publishing, has short fiction on there for $1, $2, whatever. And it's great to say, they have cover art. Some of them are done as audio. It's fantastic, I think, for short fiction. But I would hesitate to say that availability necessarily equals success or popularity. In other words, yeah, it's out there, but it's so hard to tell how that is actually selling because it's like prevalence incidence almost. It's like, yes, you're seeing it everywhere, but how many times is it actually being bought? Well, and I don't know the answer to that, but I mean, it could be more than I think. But
I agree. I doubt if I would have been as aware of it if you hadn't brought it up to me, of how much short fiction was available. So maybe it's something that we haven't found yet, and maybe a different generation or a different group use the internet with less printed page. I'm not trying to say books are dominant.
Yeah, what do you have to say, Susan?
I'm wondering if novella length is a good compromise for the public between the novel and the short story that might attract more attention.
Yeah. I mean, I think I know the Kevin Kline movie Emperor's Club, I think that's what it was called, that had nothing to do with a novella, and I can't remember the author of that set of novella in print, but they, I thought they were fantastic, and it's obviously a story arc that is satisfactory because it was chopped into a movie. I mean, you could take a short story and make it a movie, but I do think at that length, you have more room for a story arc, obviously, and yet, I mean, I love novellas. I sometimes I prefer them to novels because I can digest more of them. The Last Man on Earth, it was later called, the Will Smith movie with the vampires and everything like that.
I Am Legend.
There you go, thank you. By Richard Matheson. Well, that was originally a novella length. You'd probably be surprised how many big movies or even novels that were later turned into novels began as novellas. But what do the rest of you guys think about novella length?
A novella as a graphic novel for people who can't draw.
So, yeah, right, yeah, that's... but are there times which, whether it's a graphic novel or whether it's a novella, you would feel more inclined to pick it up knowing that it wasn't a novel? Yeah, I certainly feel that way. I know, yeah. You're nodding. Nobody can hear you nodding.
Yes. Definitely.
That's Kathy Tomlinson.
Give me little signs. Supplies.
That's right.
Yeah.
Little prompts. I'm going to put in a laugh track, too. I think that'll be great. Yeah, nice laugh track. Okay, so Molly, you were interested in this process. Do you have anything that you want to say about novellas?
Well, I'm kind of interested in talking about specific short stories rather than the genre at large.
We can change gears. Why don't you go into that? You know, because I'm hoping that the few and far between listeners, I have no doubt, are interested not only in bettering their craft, but in being exposed to gold standards in terms of short fiction. So yeah, please.
Sure. So I've been really interested in Nathan Englander recently. He's a short story writer. His debut novel was For the Relief of Unbearable Urges. And he's a graduate of the Iowa Writers' Workshop several years ago, but I've sort of newly discovered him. He writes on a lot of Jewish topics. Let's see, I think his second collection of short stories, the title story is Anne Frank. He's great. Check him out.
You know, I have the terrible habit of saying Anne Frankly, and it always comes out Anne Frankly. Yeah, I don't know, the total aside, but yeah, I catch myself all the time saying And frankly, I think there's nothing.
To me, it kind of seems odd that short stories don't sell more than they do, because I would think that, and maybe I'm just in a different situation because of, I pretty much use the bus for transportation, but I have a Kindle, and so that's always in my purse, and I read on the bus. And sometimes, depending on how long it's been since I've read a certain book, sometimes it's hard getting back into it because it might have been a week or more or a month since I read anything. And I would think that a short story would be easier because it would be something that I could read and finish in like a 10-minute time. And I would think maybe that would be the same thing for others, like they could read maybe, you know, while they're waiting for their kid in the line at school.
Or commuting,
at the doctor's office or whatever. So it seems to me strange that they don't sell more than they do.
Well, let's talk about, like, maybe it actually has to do with the physical media. Then do you think that that might change with everyone having e-readers? Not everyone, and that's a bad assumption. Not everyone has e-readers. I think it's going in that direction, but you know, dead trees still sell almost as many as digital versions. So,
were not short stories more popular when there were more magazines?
Or serialized stories, that's right. You know, you had a lot of the Victorian writers, for instance, and early 20th century writers that would have a serialized fiction story in a daily or weekly publication. And that was people's radio, TV, internet game.
Ellery Queen type magazines.
Mm-hmm.
Well, almost all women's fiction used to have, I mean, women's magazines, Red Book, Home and Garden, McCall's, they all used to have at least one fiction story.
Yeah.
Every
so,
single month, but they cut those out a long time ago.
And I'll be honest, I think that I would propose that that is less a reflection of a distaste for short fiction and more reflection of how media is sort of dictating short attention spans, if that makes any sense. Because I don't think that people are naturally, oh, they have no attention span. James Cameron's still making 3-hour movies, and they're still off the chain. So I don't think it's a matter of attention span. I think it is... We're going to digest whatever is spoon-fed to us, and I don't mean that in a negative way, but it's true. If we're going to have whiz-bang news coverage, we're going to absorb news in a whiz-bang fashion. You know, so I think that with media, where a quote in-depth article is 250 words, I think it has more to do with the fact that an in-depth article is now 250 words, that they don't print short fiction, rather than them saying, I don't think people want short fiction anymore.
It's quality. In other words, people may have less time, but they're more sophisticated. What they choose to spend their time on, they will commit to. Like you said, if it's a 3-hour movie.
Right, because I can't imagine, I'm just not that big of a music guy, me going to something, a concert, especially a really loud one, a 3-hour long concert would be a little bit like hell to me. And yet I would sit through a 4-hour movie and not even be uncomfortable. I'd be like, yeah, I'll eat it up. I went to the Harry Potter movie marathon, which was like 14 hours. I was like, yeah, bring it on. I got tired of movie snacks after the first movie, but I had to have something of real substance to eat. But other than that, yeah, I was like, bring it on. In 14 hours of music, I'd rather be in a catatonic state. Go ahead.
I think that Andrew...
BLT sesame? And a dark sesame with cream cheese?
And just start that over whenever. Yeah.
I think that Andrew's stories, his military stories, would fit perfectly into this circumstance because I think each one of them stands on its own and yet could easily be the novel. So I think you would hit both both groups of people with Andrew's work.
And you know, you might have stories like, I know I kind of like the movies, and these movies typically aren't necessarily as popular either, but where you have a, and there's a name for it, and I apologize, I don't know the name, where you have one running story, and then smaller stories interjected, and then they usually somehow tie into the larger story.
That's
called life. Yeah, that's called life. So, I think that there is room for something like that, and I saw it like in... Chuck Palahniuk's Haunted is a good example, where there's a narrative running throughout the length of it, but it is about a writer's workshop that is haunted, ostensibly. And then you hear the stories of each writer. So each of these are coming in an interesting voice and in a very, very Chucky P perspective on what is actually happening, which is, of course, bananas. And then, this running narrative to sort of tie it all together. I still don't know that people who would prefer a novel would quickly commit to a format like that, but I think people could commit to that faster than they would buy a collection of short stories. So.
Well, and, I appreciate the sentiment and comments. I have a lot of work to do, but that same model, the things they carried is very much that way. It was published, a few of these articles got published, and then, the book, it was a compilation, and they said, contains the short stories or these works. And some people were familiar with those works and then went on to buy the book. A Tale of Two Cities. It was a series of articles, essentially.
Mm-hmm. I think most of Conan Doyle's stories, before they became novels, were serialized or short stories.
I'm not surprised by that. Yeah.
He published because he worked full-time as a doctor. So.
Yeah. Kathy, yeah, something else there.
Those short stories were in every textbook
that I'm taking creative writing. So
which ones?
That's a good way. I mean, the things they carry, you know, there's some Anne Frank pieces, some out of the 50s, and you know, that's a big audience right there.
Oh, of course, if you can get anthologized, you're probably pretty golden, since colleges put out a new publication of a story just because they changed the pagination. Another $200 copy. So,
yeah. I have to wonder if part of the reason, I don't know, I'm just guessing, is that people they can't be pulled in a million different directions. Because, like, if there's one short story, then this one is about something entirely different. Like, I have friends, for example, the shows Lost and Once Upon a Time, which are written by the same people and actually have a lot of similarities.
Don't spoil the end of Lost, by the way. I haven't seen the end.
Oh, my. It's fantastic.
Okay, all right. Easy.
But I've seen both, and I love both. But I have friends that can't stand them because they're like, I just can't stand being strung along and this happens and then all of a sudden this happens and like, and then I'm pivoted and then, you know, I feel like I'm being pulled in a million different directions, and they don't mind stories and they like good storytelling, but they just want to be able to tell kind of where it's going, and that it's going somewhere.
Well, I mean, look at sitcoms. I mean, I cannot imagine sitcoms being successful if it weren't for the fact that they're so safe. Because it's like, you can see where the joke's going 10 minutes down the road. You know exactly where the setup's going to be. Oh, that's going to come up again. There's the buried gun, so to speak, and then that joke is going to come in at the very end and then be completely forgotten before the next episode. Everything resets.
But not to be the dead horse, it's also the sitcoms are the cause of time.
No animals were hurt in the making of this podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
It's the time people watch sitcoms because the solution is there in 22 minutes.
Sure, yeah.
And if there's no solution, they don't bother. They just watch it next week. And it's... I think it's somewhat of a time factor.
You know, it's funny you mentioned Lost. Obviously, it's J.J. Abrams directed, but I'm sure the writers were all over the place, right? I mean, you probably had...
There were two main
writers
and
they
the whole
like
time, and they're the same ones for Once Upon a Time.
Okay. That's good to know, actually. Maybe that means I'll have to check out Once Upon a Time.
How many shows does Abrams have presently on broadcast TV? I bet you quite a few.
Yeah, I don't know. Because movies, too, obviously. He had the Star Trek franchise.
Oh, yes,
okay.
As you were talking about.
Yeah. But I'm just thinking, I remember a couple of episodes of Lost being really bookended as shows. And then, I mean, I really liked that, even though I liked the running narrative. The story, and this doesn't contain any spoilers, again, this is a bookended episode, but the one about the two, the male and female... sort of quarreling lovers who, the one, it was almost like this, it was almost Chaucer-esque where, where the three people who are looking for death and they're going to kill death, they end up, it's this sort of rock, paper, scissor, betrayal kind of story. It was a very neat bookended episode. And yet, I can see why that wouldn't work every time, because that would essentially be like a collection of short stories, you know, at that point. And no, people want this running narrative, I think.
And it's frustrating how well the Grim Reaper plays rock, paper, scissors. It's just...
He's too good at it.
He's too good.
It's too good, yeah. All right, well, we do need to go and wrap this up, because we're about to start our regular meeting, actually. But we will definitely revisit this topic and, you know... get and maybe hear more from Molly at another time in terms of those gold standard stories, since we spent about 10 seconds on that. But you know what? Hopefully someone listening will be like, hey, I'm going to check out those that collection, and we'll have more on that later. So, well, thank you all very much, and we'll see you again next time.